Welcome to episode 413 of Troubadours and Raconteurs with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. On this week's episode, we have a grand conversation with someone from across the pond. Educator, journalist, transgender advocate, Debbie Hayton. And we talk with Debbie about her background, the eloquence of physics, gender dysphoria, conformity, shame, being yourself, conversion therapy, what gender is, and celebrating our differences, among other things. A grand conversation with Debbie Hayton on this week's program. Our illustrious associate producer, Dr. Michael Pavese, shares a wonderful piece that coincides beautifully with the thread of this week's episode. We'll keep it a surprise. We also have an EW essay titled Confide and a poem called Yellow Hue. And of course, all of this will be imbued, infused with the wonderful energy of several great tunes. It's so nice to have you with us. Let's get to it. Episode 413 of Troubadours and Raconteurs.
Party clown.
confide. How do I know who I am? What is a woman? What is a man? Is this whole gender thing an existential sham? Sex is T-Rex. Vexed and perplexed as my Cro-Magnon neighbor Stan. Are you white, Caucasian, black, brown, American, Asian, African, Persian, Christian, Arab, Jew, vegan, carnivore, slurping down a bowl of tofu beef stew? My mother is a Catholic. My neighbor is a Muslim. The paper boy might be an atheist prognosticator running for mayor of New York this coming June. And dysphoria derails the dreams of Gloria, whose parents named her Kenneth as a baby living in Astoria, Queens. Physics speaks clear and true without much ado as the physical world spins slowly to the pace set by the galaxy we call home. The sunrise brings welcome to each of us every day. And we walk, run, jump, crawl into the fray, trying to fit in, hearing, if not listening, to what we have inside, despite how deeply the need for someone to whom we might confide. While still, this limited engagement must coincide with the needs, wants, and expectations representative of all those you live for and among. Where is the truth, the justice, the freedom, acceptance, love, the calm coming out, and joy of being home, together and alone, comfortable in your own skin, as deep and sweet, complete as a beautiful poem, originating from within, more powerful than any such notion as original sin. We are all kin.
Yeah.
Debbie Hayton, is that you?
It's me here. Good to speak to you.
So nice to have you on Troubadours and Rock On Tours. And before we get started, let me give the listeners some background information. Debbie is a high school science teacher from central England. She transitioned in 2012, and she has written extensively about what it means to be trans without believing in something called gender identity. Debbie has written for The Evening Standard, The Economist, The Times, Publico, The Huffington Post UK, The National Review, and Yahoo, to name a few. To Debbie, trans is something we do rather than something we are. As a teacher, Debbie is particularly concerned about the impact of gender identity ideology on children. Troubadours and Rock On Tours is very happy to have on the program Debbie Hayton. So again, thank you for taking the time out over there in central England. It's a little later there than it is here as we speak.
Yeah, it's only 4 hours at the moment, though, because we've not put our clocks forward just yet.
Oh, when do you guys go on to daylight savings?
I think it's 2 weeks' time, but it catches me out every year.
Yeah, it was difficult waking up this morning for me. But anyhow, before we get into some more specific questions, how about you share with everyone, if you would, as much as you would like, about your personal journey that has brought you to where you are today?
Okay, well, I transitioned, it's getting on for 10 years ago now, in 2012 it was. And it came at the end of a long, long case of psychological issues, which I've been struggling with. And it did solve them. So I transitioned in 2012 and was able to then get back to life, get back to teaching. I'm a teacher, and just get on with life. That was what I did it for.
So when you say some of the psychological issues, a phrase that I read and I think I understand, but maybe this connects to it. And if not, please tell me. But I think is it gender dysphoria that causes that kind of struggle?
Yeah, gender dysphoria is the label which is attached to it, which describes the psychological distress, this almost insatiable need to be the other sex, which doesn't really make a lot of sense. But there is definitely something there, and something which causes huge mental health issues. And gender dysphoria is the label which we attach to that.
And do you think it's a fair assessment or definition that is used when trying to explain what you yourself experienced?
Yeah, it is. You need a label for these things. You need to actually attach something to it so that when you're talking to other people and talking to them about their experiences, you can relate to other people. Yeah.
And so how old were you, roughly, if you don't mind me asking, when you transitioned?
I can remember. I was 44.
40. So we're the same age. We're the same age, just about.
Right.
That's cool. You mentioned, and I've read some of the wonderfully written articles that you've had published, about your concern regarding the impact of gender identity ideology on children. Now, you're a teacher. You're a teacher at high school level?
Yeah, I teach children aged 11 to 18 in the UK. Yeah.
And is it physics you teach?
I do.
Jeez, you must be pretty smart.
I always say that compared to human beings, physics is easy. Human beings are difficult. We're complicated.
That makes total sense to me. I have an engineering background, so physics is something that I'm daunted by, but I respect and love at the same time. But you're right; it makes much more sense than people. Anyhow, when you mention your concern regarding the gender identity ideology on children, what do you mean?
I mean this idea that gender dysphoria, as I call it, is caused by a gender identity, that we all have this this thing, this almost like soul-like concept inside our heads that determines whether we're a man or a woman or neither, which is actually unscientific. You know, whether we're a man or a woman is our biology rather than our psychology. But I worry that children are picking this up, thinking that they can choose whether they're a man or a woman, and they can't, you know, or whether they grow into a man or a woman, and they can't really. Because these things are fixed. We can no more choose our sex than we can choose our height or our eye colour. This is what biology has granted to us. But children being told that they can choose their sex, and it's putting them in a really difficult position when they're uncomfortable about themselves, uncomfortable about their relationships with others, and if they think that they may have been born in the wrong body. That's the jargon which is used. If they think they've been born in the wrong body, then they may be pressurized into doing something about it, which may leave them with, it may leave them infertile, sterile, and on medication for life. And they're making these decisions before they can appreciate what it means to be an adult.
So they're not developed enough to make these decisions, is what I'm garnering.
Yeah, you know, for a pre-pubescent child, because it's children of that age who are being asked to make these decisions, to know what it means to be an adult, to grow into an adult, they just don't know, and they're being asked to make these decisions. There's been a big court case in the UK brought by Keira Bell, a woman in her early 20s who transitioned as a teenager and then detransitioned after having medical treatment, and her claim was that she was not able at age 16, to give informed consent, to actually be able to make the decisions which she did.
And the decisions she made, we're not talking about reassignment, right?
She had, it was hormone therapy, surgeries which she's had. Her body's been changed for life, and now in her early 20s she realized that this was a mistake, and her claim is that she was too young to make those decisions at age 16.
I mean it seems to me that I'm talking from a perspective understanding the legal landscape in the U.S. you wouldn't be able to make those decisions until you're 18 or older. Unless you have parental consent.
Well, it's, can parents make this consent for their children? This is the other question. It's, you know, children under the age of 18 in the UK are not able to, they're not able to have a tattoo. They're not able to buy cigarettes. They're not able to buy alcohol. But they have been able, up until very recently, to consent to this treatment, which arguably has a much bigger impact on their bodies than the other things do.
Oh, for sure, I would say. It must put you in a strange position, in a way, because you are someone who is transgender. You have transitioned. And then for you to come out and say, hey, listen, I don't think these folks should be able to make that decision. There are probably folks in the LGBT community, Q community, that are saying, hey, you're our enemy.
I do face quite a lot of opposition for what I say. I'm making arguments. I enter into debate. People disagree with me. What I find quite difficult is when people don't come back and counter my arguments. They will say I'm a horrible person for saying this. I guess they look at what I'm saying is they say, well, you transitioned, but what you're saying is that these children shouldn't be able to do what you did. But my counter to that is to say that I did this when I was an adult, when I was in, you know, fully able to appreciate what I was doing, and crucially, at which time I'd already had my own children. So I was at a much later life stage when it wasn't my own ability to have children which was ever at stake here. There was much, much less at stake for me when I was 44 than when I would have been when I was as age 14. And if I'm honest with myself, had this treatment been available to me when I was 14, I would have taken it. And I would have clamoured for it and been desperate for it, and then I wouldn't have had the children which I did have, and that really does take me back and think this would have been wrong for me, and I worry that children now are also are being put into that position of having to make those decisions.
You know, it's hard for me. I'm trying to understand, and because I'm a heterosexual male, and you know, I really haven't questioned at all my you know, sex or my sexual orientation or my gender, anything. Well, I can't question my sex, as you put it. It's true. You're born a certain sex. So it's hard for me, not because I disagree or I think it's wrong, it's just hard for me because I have not been in that position. So, you know, excuse my ignorance and indulge me to better understand. And I'm sure there are a majority of people who are in a similar situation as I am, trying to understand. What, I mean, it, what is it like for someone at a young age to begin with to have that sort of gender dysphoria, so people could understand the struggle. And you know what inevitably comes to people's minds, if they don't say it even, is that, well, that person just has a some sort of mental problem, oftentimes, all too often, which is wrong, but that comes up. How would you respond to that?
Well, I guess what you're saying is it's framing mental problem as perhaps just mental or psychological difference. You know, as human beings, we're all different. Some of us who are happy with our bodies, and other people have got issues with their bodies. Some people like to change them in one way or another. It is, you know, to have an insatiable desire to be the other sex is. It's a psychological difference. It's something that makes us different. But what we tr as human beings, we're all different. But within society, it's the conformity which society puts on us to say that well, if you feel a bit different, there's something wrong about that, or it's something to be shameful about, or something which is, as you said, a problem. Whereas these things are just differences. As the more I realize about what it means to be trans, it is a discomfort with your body, but it doesn't mean that because you've a discomfort with your sex body that you are the other sex. In some ways, what we're doing, we're saying to, and especially to children, we're saying that if you're unhappy with what it means to be a boy, then be a girl, which is just going from one category to another. We should be saying to children, be yourself, and instead of trying to change somebody's mind, as that's been done in the past when people have tried conversion therapies to change people's minds. You can't do that. We've gone to try and change people's bodies, but perhaps it'd be better to be reconciling people's minds to people's bodies without the hang-ups we have in societies that say if you're a man, you should look like this, and if you're a woman, you should look like this.
I understand. So the presumption that if you have a physical self that is a man, you know, anatomically, but your gender, your sense of gender is more in line with traditional female, then you could still carry yourself anatomically and even with regard to sexual orientation as a straight male, but you can, but your gender is a female. Is again, excuse my ignorance, excuse my sloppy approach to try and
No, it's fine.
explain. Can you give me some insight on that?
Well, I think it's that what we've done is we've conflated this idea of gender with sex. So we've ended up in a mess. We really have. In terms of gender, it's what is gender? You know, in It's when I learned foreign language. You see, in the English language, we don't tend to use gender, but when I learned French at school, we did, and we talk about masculine and feminine, and those are the adjectives which are used. And when it comes to gender, we're all very mixtures of masculine and feminine, and but in terms of sex, we're male or female. What we've done with the language and with the politics, we've conflated those two ideas to the point when many people have got confused. And if people identify with feminine characteristics, that means that perhaps they're female. But the true freedom as individuals is you can be a male person, you can be your unique mix of masculine and feminine qualities, and the same way that female people can be as well. But by conflating these, we've just caused confusion. And so people don't necessarily have the words to describe what they're meaning. People get confused. People do back off from this because they think it's more complicated than what it actually is. But at the base of it, we're all a we're because of our biology, because of our species, we are all male or female, but because we're human beings, we're a unique mix of masculine and feminine. But that is complete. It's a different quality. It's psychology rather than biology.
Psychology rather than biology. And you know, the more you think about it, and I'm sure the more I think about it, at least, to again, as you mentioned earlier in the conversation, to force people to conform to this idea of what is normal or okay is the root of the problem, really, right? I mean,
It is, and this and my concern is confused children, confused boys who think, I'm struggling with being a boy. Perhaps try being a girl. What you're doing is you're rather than being a boy who perhaps might like to express himself in a feminine way, which is unusual, we're trying to impose a new conformity on these children by saying, look, you're really a girl, therefore you can conform as a girl rather than not conform as a boy, and vice versa.
right. And the concern that you have too is when people, maybe when they're younger, they shouldn't be making I guess irreversible or very difficult to reverse decisions based on their physicality.
Yeah, that's what really does concern me. It's when children's because there's a pressure with puberty. It's a clock that ticks for children, and a child which is struggling as age 4, 5, 6 with this gender dysphoria, and that was my experience as well at that age. Puberty is there ticking. The pressure to do something about this before their body is changed in ways which they may not want at that age, is huge. And my concern is that historically, gender dysphoria in childhood, about 80% of it has gone away. It's desisted with puberty. As children grow up, they're then able to be reconciled to their bodies in the vast majority of cases. That is that's my concern, that if 80% traditionally have desisted through adolescence, then we're transitioning children who don't need to be transitioned. And even the 20% who will come back in later life and say, I guess like me, who said that I really struggled in childhood and it didn't go away, you can say, well, you can transition as an adult. If once you grow to adulthood and understand what it means to be an adult, you can transition. And puberty itself doesn't isn't you know it isn't it doesn't stop that.
Right.
And yeah.
Right. You're listening to Troubadours and Rock on Tours with E.W. Conundrum Demure on WFTE Radio, Mount Cobb and Scranton, Pennsylvania. Community radio at its finest. And I mean, and I think a lot of the terminology is mixed up for a lot of people who don't have this as a firsthand experience and they're trying to understand it. Because when you're talking about transitioning is a physical commitment you're making to change yourself physically, right?
Yeah, it can be. It can mean different things to different people. And there can be a social transition, which is a purely social change.
Okay.
And then there can be medical transition, surgical transition as well. And some people do one but not the other.
So you're concerned more about the children going with a physical transition, not so much a social transition, or both?
Physical transition really does worry me, but I'm also concerned about children aged 5, 6, 7 making social transitions and then fitting into society as the other sex. And children that age will pass, because without secondary sex characteristics, they will be taken for the other sex. But what happens when they get to puberty? If a child has been socially conditioned as the other sex from age 5, 6, 7, when puberty arrives at age 11, 12, that puts them in a really difficult position when they will develop in ways different to the rest of the sex that they've been identifying with. And there, they'd be put in a really difficult position. But why are we saying to 5, 6, 7-year-old children, if you want to be comfortable in society, you've got to pretend to be the other sex? Why aren't we giving children the freedom to express themselves without denying biological facts, scientific truth, which is their sex? But that means changing society. We've talked about changing minds and changing bodies. What we really need to be doing is changing society so people can express themselves as they feel comfortable.
I love it. That's very insightful. Debbie Hayton here on Troubadours and Rock on Tours. And I mean, you're an educator. You're a journalist. You're as well. Would you say you're a transgender advocate too, among other things?
I do, because as transgender people, we have the right in the UK to live our lives free of harassment, discrimination. I was able to transition and carry on with my job as a teacher. The law protected that and also gave my employer the confidence to support that. And I fully support, fully support that and call for that to be protected. Transgender people, we become so politicized in recent years. It used to be that we just wanted to keep our heads down and keep our jobs and carry on with life. But we have become political footballs. But behind that, there's real people here who need somebody to say, yeah, we need to be protected against harassment and discrimination, and also the specific healthcare that we need. We find in the UK that the government is a lot happier to talk about legal changes to laws which may or may not be helpful, and the less willing to spend money on health services which we need, because they cost money. And that's what I'm campaigning for.
So the legal changes, they don't give relief or assistance as much as actual health care opportunities.
Yeah, it's doing things. You see, there's been a huge debate in the UK about changing our law on gender recognition. To actually legally change your sex in the UK, you need a doctor, or two doctors, a specialist and your own doctor, to actually say there's a medical need for this. Somebody's under psychological distress. There's been political moves to change that, so you can change your legal sex, the sex which you're registered as, just by checking a box on a form, which I felt was unhelpful, because it questioned the credibility of the whole process. And I felt that the credibility of the system that we rely on was being called into question there. But for the government, it was quite cheap to change the law. A few debates in Parliament, the law's changed. But to actually pay for the healthcare, and specifically the mental health care that we need, the psychotherapy, the counselling that we need, is very expensive, and they're less willing to pay for that.
The national healthcare system doesn't cover it.
Well, it should, but our healthcare system in the UK, it's all free at point of need, but it gets rationed by waitlists. So to find specialist gender services now under the health service, there are waitlists now of 2 to 3 years, which is just it's inhumane. Is that you can pay money and
private,
see people privately. We can do that, but the healthcare system which we pay for and we rely on is totally overwhelmed.
And would that be something you'd like to see available, that sort of specialist with the national healthcare system for adolescent, for children, adolescents, and right through adulthood, dealing with?
Yeah, and it's mental health support. This is a side of the healthcare service which is under-resourced and it's undervalued. Mental health support, actually giving people the time and the space to talk through their issues with somebody. We don't do that. We're much happier to change laws or even, write prescriptions for drugs. Mm-hmm. It's cheaper to do that. And it's not just transgender healthcare.
Right.
It's healthcare across the board. You know, people with all sorts of mental health issues will find that it's cheaper to prescribe some drugs for this rather than mask the problem, rather than talk through the issues so that people can actually get to the base of the problems that they're struggling with.
And I like very much how you've brought me to this understanding that it is healthy, it seems to me, to embrace the fact that when you are within gender dysphoria, it is a psychological issue. It is a psychological problem. It's not to say there's something wrong, but there's something that has to be dealt with.
Yeah, it's like I'm short-sighted, and that's a medical problem as well, but mm-hmm. I can correct that by wearing glasses.
Right.
So, you know, these are the sort of issues. Yeah, it's different to have gender dysphoria. It does mark you out as different. But it's hard with gender dysphoria because it caused me so much mental distress. But to actually reconcile ourselves to who we are and not be ashamed of, psychological differences. I hesitate to use the word psychological disorder, which is a pejorative, mm-hmm. to say you have a disorder. But really, to have a disorder is just not to be. It's not to be ordered and not to stand in line but to stand aside because I don't want to be number 53 in a line of 100 people. I want to stand to the side of that line and be myself, but that in itself is a disorder because you're not taking your place in the ordered line. But it's this idea, I guess it's just the conformity which we try to impose on ourselves as human beings. We want to fit in, we want to conform, and when we realize we're different, that causes the issues. And I'd like, it's better to celebrate and our differences than try to conform, I think.
Wonderfully put, Debbie Hayton. Believe it or not, we're just about done with our talk this go round. I would love to talk with you again in the future, and I give you an opportunity now if you'd like to say whatever you would like to say to the listeners.
I just sometimes people get told that this is really, really complicated and that people away from this debate won't understand it. But it's not. Sex is, we all know that there are two sexes. It is simple, and we can tell sex, we can tell each other sex, and that's not complicated. What is complicated are human beings who sometimes have difficulty fitting into there. And what I'd really like to tell your listeners is let's celebrate our differences rather than try to impose a conformity on each other.
Thank you, Debbie. It was a pleasure talking with you.
And with you. And nice to talk to you.
Take care.
Something wasn't right. There was not enough. three poems by Adrian Rich. And Jennifer's Tigers. And Jennifer's Tigers prance across the screen, bright topaz denizens of a world of green. They do not fear the men beneath the tree. They pace in sleek, chivalric certainty. And Jennifer's fingers, fluttering through her wool, find even the ivory needle hard to pull. The massive weight of Uncle's wedding band sits heavily upon Aunt Jennifer's hand. When Aunt is dead, her terrified hands will lie still ring with ordeals she was mastered by. The tigers in the panel that she made will go on prancing, proud and unafraid. A valediction forbidding mourning. My swirling wants, your frozen lips, the grammar turned and attacked me. Themes, written under duress, emptiness of the nations. They gave me a drug that slowed the healing of wounds. I want you to see this before I leave. The experience of repetition as death, the failure of criticism to locate the pain, the poster in the bus that said, "My bleeding is under control." A red plant in a cemetery of plastic reeds. A last attempt. The language is a dialect called metaphor. These images go unglossed. Hair, glacier, flashlight. When I think of a landscape, I am thinking of a time. When I talk of taking a trip, I mean forever. I could say, those mountains have a meaning, but further than that, I could not say. To do something very common, in my own way. Burning oneself out. We can look into the stove tonight, as into a mirror, yes? The serrated log, the yellow-blue gaseous core, the crimson, flittered gray ash. Yes. I know inside my eyelids and underneath my skin. Time takes hold of us like a draft upward, drawing at the heats in the belly, in the brain. You told me of setting your hand into a print of a long-dead Indian, and for a moment I knew that hand, that print, that rock, the sun producing powerful dreams. A word can do this, or, as tonight, the mirror of the fire of my mind, burning as if it could go on, burning itself, burning down, feeding on everything, till there is nothing in life that has not fed that fire.
I drank the dregs of the champagne alone. Warm flat coppery coins down my throat. I'm saving up for a rainy day, and I plan to spend it in one place. I threw the party so I could stay put. You brought the bottle like a promise I forgot. A new year begins, it ushers us in. The nod in my gut is coming with. He'll blame the alcohol and you'll blame the full moon. She'll blame the fall of men and I'll blame the part of you that can't let up on the reins. You got life in a chokehold. You say that it's all the same, all glittering fool's gold. I can't tell how big my heart is. drinks in a bathtub keep piling in. Now I'm locking the door till the morning. He'll blame the alcohol and you'll blame the full moon. She'll blame the fall of men and I blame the evening news for giving us doomsday and dropping.
Yellow hue. The bright, lazy neon lamp cockles a nearby scratch on a whitewashed wall, witness to so much angst and tears kept inside, almost out a few times, but ultimately kept and transformed into sad, angry despair, then escapist vice. Rolling the dice on this soul. Yellow hue, I cherish you. A lamp light that is steadfast and whole.
Disappear. How could I hold it still?
And there you have it, episode 413 of Troubadours and Rock On Tours, with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. I'd like to thank those folks who made this episode possible. First and foremost, Debbie Hayton, our associate producer, Dr. Michael Pavese, poet Adrian Rich, and these musical artists, Django Reinhardt, Stefan Grappelli, Jenny Lewis, T-Rex, Todd Rundgren, Lucy Duckus, Dow and the Get Down Stay Down, Branford Marsalis, and Terrence Blanchard too. And of course, I'd like to thank you for listening. Until next time, let's give it a go and do our best with this time. Take care.